If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
All right, Kim Gordon, thanks very much. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio here along Michigan Avenue. Terry Savage will join us in just a couple of minutes or so. You just heard Steve Alexander talk about the Fed notes expected later this afternoon. I know we're going to talk to Terry about that. Louis Lazar comes by to talk. Well, you know, Louis is, I mentioned the paddle pub that we're going to talk about. He wrote about that recently. But Louis is also a big Olympic figure skating fan. It's an unlikely thing, college basketball and figure skating for Louis. But he's got a piece about the ratings and whether or not you all have been watching the Olympics this year. And it turns out in Chicago, not so much. So that's coming up. We'll also talk about the dilemma that Walmart is facing as they try to do more e-retail. And they're suffering on Wall Street this week. Terry Savage joins us now on a phone line. Terry, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Good to be with you.
All right. So it's all about the Fed notes today, right? And this is sort of Yellen's last set of notes, correct?
Exactly. This is leftover from the last meeting where Janet Yellen presided. So they're going to be looking for a couple of words. Look, what everybody is interested in is, number one, when they will likely raise rates. There's just like a 99% chance they'll raise rates in a couple of weeks in March. The question is whether they will raise rates three times or four times this year. So everybody's parsing the words few. If they say a few times, then that means three rates are suggested. But if there are several, that means it could likely be four rates. So that's the wording that's going to be scrutinized. But more importantly, the new Fed chairman, Paul, will be doing that testimony in front of Congress next week. His testimony will be released on Friday so we can read it. But what's weird about that testimony always is some of the strange questions he gets from the representatives. He testifies before the House and the Senate.
Like strange, like what?
Oh, Maxine Waters can be counted on to come out of left field with something. It's, you know, it's like a reality show. I never watched those Desperate Housewives reality shows or whatever those are, but Real Housewives. But I always want to watch the Fed testimony to see what might come up and how smooth. I've met Fed Chairman Powell. He's a very smooth guy. It's going to be a fascinating show to watch.
I think in the history.
Now you know what I like.
I think in the history of the English language, the sentence, "I've never watched those reality shows, but I'd love to watch the Fed testimony," those words have never been put together before like that.
I think that tells you more about me than I meant to reveal.
The other thing is,
I want to give just a quick little bit of credit to Dennis Gartman, who writes really a spectacular market letter every morning, which I get free and would cost you a fortune. But Dennis was talking this morning in his letter about the fact that we are all accustomed to the fact that every time the Fed raises rates, it's like 25 basis points, like a quarter of a percent. But that he pointed out that there were many times in the past, if you go back especially to the 1980s, when you had a 200 basis point, two full percentage points in rates. That was in July of 71 when they raised the Fed funds rates from 3.5 to 5.5. And then in 73, they moved them up 200 basis points again. And back in January of 80, they had a huge Fed fund increase. So the other thing, let's just lay it up in the air there now, is that will the Fed be more aggressive under Powell and not just raise rates when they do it a quarter of a point, but could it be maybe a half a point?
Well, what would happen? Because that would be a pretty, even though it's happened before, that seems to me like it would be a pretty dramatic shift from what's happened in the past 10, 15.
It would be, and I think you'd assume the Fed would have to see something dramatically different happening in the economy, a real spurt of inflation. And that could be caused by, the dollar's stronger now, so we don't have to worry about import prices as much, but it could be caused by labor shortages, pay increases, other business costs rising, and the strong economy looking for workers, you know, that'll push wage costs up. Because we don't have that many immigrants, and we are now running out of skilled workers.
So you have a great column up at terrysavage.com today that gave me a little pause for concern. One sentence, think about this. At an annual inflation rate of only 3%, the spending power of your money will be cut in half in about 25 years. So if you're socking money away from retirement and it's not growing, or you don't have vehicles to help it grow, it loses 50% of its value over 25 years. That's something we should be aware of.
That's a historical average inflation rate. We've had lower years more recently, but we've had years of high inflation. And it's the one reason why, if you took your whatever it was, $250,000 in retirement savings, and an insurance company said, I'll give you an immediate annuity of X dollars a month, that they'll figure that out based on your age and your gender, your life expectancy, and what they think they can earn on it. They will promise you a lifetime income of, let's just say whatever it would be, $3,000 a month. And you go, boy, that, my Social Security, I can live just fine on that. But if you're 65 and you live to be, you know, your late 80s, 90, 92, which is possible, then your that fixed check will buy a lot less stuff, and you could be in real trouble. It's the one reason you don't take a lifetime annuity with all your money, because inflation is very insidious and dangerous.
So we're talking not gold, but the stock market?
So when I went through some of the things you could do. I mean, what could you do to hedge against inflation? Well, you could be in a different currency, but who wants to be in euros or yen? Gold. But gold hasn't had such a great track record because we haven't had much inflation.
I bought some pesos yesterday. How are pesos doing?
I hope you have a place to visit in Mexico where you can spend them.
I do. I'm not holding them.
Yeah, but if NAFTA falls apart, you know, then Mexico's in trouble. Ditto Canada. So other currencies, a lot of people are saying, hey, Bitcoin, the government can't make more of them, et cetera, et cetera. Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies will be our hedge against government printing too much money and causing inflation. Yeah, but then there's always the fraud aspect of switching your money from dollars to Bitcoin and back. But the one thing over the long run, the Ibbotson graphic show it, is that has outpaced inflation is that diversified stock market portfolio. So while you're having a mild heart attack about the ups and downs this week, this month, and maybe next month, part of your money still has to be in that diversified, maybe the S&P 500 fund with reinvesting dividends, because historically that's what's beaten inflation.
Yeah, check out that column. It's a nice one at terrysavage.com and explains the situation pretty well. Okay, Terry, we're going to take a break. When I come back, I want to talk to you about home affordability, but I want to start with paid family leave. It seems to be growing. Nothing here, as far as I know, in Illinois, but it's an idea whose time has maybe come. I don't know. I want to hear what you think about that. So we'll do paid family leave and home affordability. It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Louis Lazar will be here in the second half hour. We'll talk to Louis about, well, he's got a couple of stories that draw my attention. Actually, he's got quite a few, but we'll talk to him about the Olympics ratings. NBC's been tracking that. And the Chicago market hasn't done so well. Louis writes for the Chicago Business Journal, and he writes that the Chicago market has come in 27th across the country when it comes to watching the Olympics. Terry, are you contributing?
Don't put me on the line there.
You're not watching the Olympics so much?
I've been watching the Olympics, actually.
Okay.
But it's a different Olympics this year, I think.
You know, the number three market in the country for the Olympics is, I think one is Salt Lake City, two is Denver. Number three is Milwaukee.
Gee, there's enough snow out the window. But don't forget, there are a lot of Milwaukee area residents that are part
right.
of our Olympic team, and I think that might be
it's funny. Speed skating. I think speed skating is a big thing, so that helps lead to it. Okay, so I pulled this story. I don't know if it was where money, ABC News, I think I saw it, where they wrote about this growing trend toward paid family leave. Now, there's the Family Leave Act, which is 25 years old, where you can get unpaid family leave to take time off to care for someone or after you have a baby. But this is a move toward paid family leave. It's available now in California, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island. It's coming online in Washington State and Washington, D.C. And campaigns in, just real quickly, Massachusetts, Vermont, Connecticut, Oregon, Hawaii, Colorado, Minnesota, all looking at paid family leave times. And I guess one of the ways they do it, they fund it, is it's an employer-funded insurance program, and then you would get the money out of that. I haven't thought too much about it, but with an aging population, I could see this sort of gaining some steam. What do you make of it, Terry?
There's an economic answer to that, and then there's a social answer to that. And at some point lately, there it looks like they're going to intersect. And what was practically surprising about this was that New York's Paid Family Leave Act went into effect on January 1st this year. And that's, I think, a signal that the economics and the compassionate aspect of giving employees benefits have now reached the tipping point. As you noted, the law provides up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave for large companies to care for a newborn or adoption or a family member who's ill. It doesn't really, the federal law doesn't impact smaller companies with under 50, but many, many states have provided that kind of paid family leave. The other is paid sick leave, which is also a relatively new benefit, and only about five states have paid sick leave. And now that New York's enacted its paid family
leave. Oh, wait a minute. Let me back up. So we all get paid sick there. A lot of us. Most of us get paid sick days.
When but not, yeah, you get when you work for a big company.
Right.
Like WGN or
I see. Okay.
Like but if you work for, you know, Tilly's Gift Store, Tilly, who's a small business entrepreneur, has always felt, as most employers have felt, oh, we can't afford to do that.
Right,
we only
right.
have five employees. We got to replace you because we're so lean and mean. And if you're not there, we can't afford to pay you because we'll have to have a temp or something like that. And the business argument has always been it's, quote, an unfair burden on the business, especially small businesses, to require them to pay these benefits. But what's really happened as the labor market gets tighter, and, you know, it's when we talk about the labor market getting tighter, there's a bunch of things we need to talk about. There are many jobs that require drug testing. And given what's going on in our country, you know, there are a lot of people that can't pass a drug test or that have misdemeanors on their records or felony drugs. So that really shrinks the labor force.
You know, Terry, we talked to John Challenger about that. I think it was earlier this week or last week about it's time to stop with the marijuana drug testing when it comes to getting a job.
Well, but the point is, if you aren't giving these visas to qualified foreign workers under this assumption that we're going to have Americans do the jobs, we have to educate people to do them. We have to make sure that they, you know, they can take the responsibility, and we have to decide how concerned we are about prior drug history. But the fact remains that a good employee has suddenly become a much more valuable commodity. And one of the things you can do that doesn't have an immediate impact, besides raising wages, is to give some of these benefits and decide that the potential cost of having, you know, if someone's mother is ill or if someone has a family member that suddenly has a medical emergency, that allowing them to go and take care of their family members shows them what a great employer you are, and you don't want to have to start all over finding a great employee. So I think you're right on, Stephen, calling this out, that we're going to suddenly see a greater interest on passing laws in the states that give paid, not unpaid, but paid sick leave or family leave. And do you know, in all of the states, and I was going through the list of all the states that have one or the other or a piece of it, nowhere do you see Illinois. Nowhere. You don't see anywhere any even discussion. I can't even, somebody will correct me, I'm sure, but that I haven't even remember a bill in the legislature.
I think it's interesting that you point out that it's what's bringing this on is business, not compassion. That it's going to be the competition to find workers rather than concern about people, which is, you know, and that's what usually drives it. That's what usually makes things happen.
Well, we live in a capitalist economy, and the capitalists among us have decided, wait a minute, we take care of the machines that work for us. We have them serviced and updated and everything. Suddenly, despite all the fears that machines would replace people, in jobs where people, good people are required, they have become a valuable commodity. In fact, the first show of this year, Steve, you asked me, what's going to be the best investment this year? And I said, invest in yourself. If you were laid off 5 or 6 years ago and you think you're, quote, out of the labor market or partially retired or a consultant, this is the year your job, you become a more valuable resource and to go out and look for an even better job than the one that laid you off 5 years ago.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Terry Savage, thanks for joining us today. We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We'll hop on a pedal pub with Louis Lazar a little bit later in the program. But right now we're going to talk about what's going on at Walmart and e-commerce in general. Phil Waba is on a phone line. He's a senior reporter covering retail at Fortune.com. Phil, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So have you sold your Walmart stock or what's going on there?
Well, I don't own any of the stocks about the companies I write about.
The journalism, I like that.
Yeah, I might actually buy on the dip. The sell-off is a bit overdone, if you ask me.
We had John Najarian on from CNBC yesterday, and he said that the stock he was recommending yesterday was Walmart. It was down 10% yesterday, down more than 2% again today, and this is all after what? Their earnings report showed that their e-commerce isn't growing as fast as it had been in the past. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people got a little bit unnerved by, it was to be expected to some degree. They had already reached the one-year anniversary buying Jet.com, which gave them a big lift, in preceding quarters. And so then the question really is, what now? And why did they have operational snafus during the key holiday season? And so, that raised worries about the path forward.
And some of their snafus, right, they said that they took up too much warehouse space with TVs and things like that, and they didn't have other goods. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's a sort of the nerdy side of retail, just flowing goods through distribution centers and fulfillment centers. And basically, they had so many items that were specific for the holiday season that they ran out of space for more basic stuff. And so they deprived themselves of a lot of online sales that way. And that's the kind of stuff that Amazon nails. And that's the kind of stuff that Walmart needs to nail if they really want to be this serious contender.
Well,
a lot of people
and they do.
Want it to be.
Yeah. They certainly want to compete with Amazon. And we've seen them make a lot of changes. There was a story just a few weeks ago about the Sam's Clubs that are closing. I mean, they seem to be reinvesting in a way to focus on e-commerce. But is there any way they could ever catch Amazon? Or where do they hope to fit when it comes into all of that?
Well, I think catching Amazon, anything's possible, but to my mind, that ship has sailed. Amazon's e-commerce is six times bigger than Walmart. But what Walmart is trying to do is to be a good number two, but also really keep its stores at the center of how customers shop. And that means a full integration with e-commerce. They haven't tried to do grocery delivery. Instead, they've really spent a lot of money equipping Walmart stores with curbside grocery pickup. So I think that's what they're trying to do. But they're chasing a lot of rabbits right now, and it's costing a lot of money. And that, to me, was a big part of the sell-off yesterday where's the payoff for all this money?
Have they had success in doing that? I mean, has their e-commerce focus actually brought people into the stores?
Absolutely. So the e-commerce grabbed the headlines, but their in-store same-store sales increased for the 14th quarter in a row by 2.6%, which was their best holiday season in a long time. And more crucially, the number of visits by shoppers rose by 1.5% during the holiday season. So those efforts to bolster the store and to use better tech in the store and to use tech to drive people to the store is working.
Is the Walmart-Amazon fight the premier fight on the card? I mean, are there other big brick-and-mortar retailers trying as hard as Walmart is to move into e-commerce? And if so, explain them for me.
Well, those are the two 800-pound gorillas, but there are smaller primates around, too. Target is not to be trifled with. Target is, 25% the size of Walmart in terms of sales, but they've been doing a lot of great stuff with ordering online and picking up in store and using their stores, too, as distribution points and pickup points for customers. I wouldn't count them out. Costco is waking up. Costco's a little bit slow behind others in terms of e-commerce, but people love their Kirkland brand a lot, and they're finally waking up. I mean, those Amazon and Walmart are the two gigantic ones, but everybody from Ulta, which is based in the Chicago area, they're doing great stuff online. So I think that there are a lot of good players.
What's the saturation point? I mean, I don't think stores are probably ever going to go away, but I think we haven't reached the peak for e-commerce yet either. I mean, I don't know if there's a figure, but what do you think will be the ultimate percentage of shopping that's done online versus in the store?
I agree with you. I think it was sort of like a consensus thing, percentage where people think we're going to hit some sort of saturation, and it'll depend by category. But if we exclude food, some people think you can get up to 30-40%, especially categories like apparel. Mm-hmm. Now, food doesn't quite lend itself as easily to e-commerce just yet, but you could see yourself. One of the top executives of Nordstrom said in October he thinks that eventually e-commerce would be 50% of their sales.
Wow. Wow.
You know, so it depends. You know, things that are easy on apparel lends itself very well to online shopping, so that could go very high. But on the whole, I think people are thinking they could top out at 30% to 40% even.
Phil Wabal writes about retail for Fortune.com. Phil, great to talk to you. I think it's our first time together. I hope we can do it again soon.
I would love to. Thank you very much.
You bet.
And have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Lewis, you didn't hear, but Steve Alexander, I was going to talk to you. We'll just move it right up to the front because of all the things you've written in the past few weeks, the thing that's getting the most attention is the Pedal Pub.
Who knew?
But tell me about... Now, really, well, Wendy talked about it. She saw it in Nashville. It's apparently a big thing.
I'm very familiar with them Nashville.
Oh, yeah, right. You're a Southern guy. So
I'm
tell me about the Pedal Pub. Yeah.
Well, they're all over the place. And the same company that's bringing them to Naperville happens to have a big presence in Nashville as well and has been there for a number of years.
And it's just a cart that everyone pedals.
Everybody gets around it. They do the peddling, and apparently, depending on the city, you can bring your own liquor with you. And
so it's got room for a keg.
Go to the liquors, pubs, or whatever. You can't have the liquor on the pedal pub, but you can have them in Nashville. But Naperville, I think they're still trying to iron out the details.
And there's nothing like that in the state yet, or just
One in Champaign.
Okay, I thought I saw something like that in Highwood over the summer. It would have been for a special event.
No, they haven't made any. They have gotten any inroads in the suburbs either. Oh, this company that owns the Pedal Pub wants to make inroads in the suburbs.
Right. And so they're coming to Naperville. That's a done deal?
It's as done as it can be. Yeah, I mean, they're still in the final negotiations, but there's no indication it's not going through.
So it's like, what, $50 for 2 hours or something like that?
Yeah, $50, which sounds high to me, but that's
and then you just pedal around the neighborhood.
Right.
And drink to your heart's content.
The problem with them in Nashville, and I don't think it's going to be a problem in Naperville, is Nashville is so growing so fast and the traffic on the streets is so bad. These things are a great eyesore when it comes to traffic movement. And stuff gets backed up very quickly. I don't think that'll be a problem in Naperville.
Well, I did wonder about that because, you have to have fairly small side streets for these guys to sort of lumber along.
Yeah, well, there are no side streets in Nashville. They're out on the main thoroughfares.
And they're not going to want them on Route 59 in Naperville, are they?
I don't know. I don't know Naperville's layout well enough to know where they what the leeway is there, but they'll have a route, I'm sure.
All right, so we should do a Wintrust Business Lunch Pedal Pub. Will you do it next summer?
I suspect it'll be very popular. Let's face it, people love to drink, and the pedaling around just adds an exotic touch to it.
Yeah, I know, but do you want to pedal while you're having a beer?
Well, I'm the wrong person to ask because I don't do a lot of peddling or beer drinking, so I come up empty on both counts.
Hey, I was thinking of you yesterday, in fact, because I saw that Brady Tinnell was going to compete for the first time last night.
Indeed.
You're making a face. I don't know what happened.
Well, I was at the gym when it happened, unfortunately. Oh. She was the first skater, or one of the first or second skaters, right at the 7 o'clock start time, and she did fall, and she never falls, and she fell on her first jump, and it really, in the short program, when you fall, you're at a major disadvantage. So
I'm sorry to hear that because I know you saw her out west early on.
Yeah,
right?
And I still think she's got great talent, and she may redeem herself like Nathan Chin did in the long program, which isn't until Thursday. But we'll just have to wait and see. But this is a whole new thing for her on this kind of international stage. She's just new to the whole.
How old is she?
She's 18, but I mean, she's never skated internationally in this kind of a platform.
And she's local, right?
She grew up in Carpentersville. She trains in Buffalo Grove at a rink there. There aren't many. There's only one rink in Chicago.
I know that rink, I think.
Yeah.
Well, wishing her well, but I brought it up because I know that you are a big fan, but you're also writing about the ratings. And Chicago's not tuning in.
No. And they probably won't be now that she's dropped out of contention, or likely to be dropped out of contention. But Salt Lake and Denver are the two big hot spots for viewing of the Olympics.
Right. And Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, and apparently that's because, although I'm having a little hard of a time buying that, it's because of the speed skating. You know, there's a big training center for speed skating.
Oh, yeah, the Kohl Center, I think it is.
Right.
And remember Dan Jansen and all those guys?
That's where we really began to find out about Milwaukee. But
So that's what they think is fueling
what they think may be driving the ratings there. But there hasn't been a lot of speed skating on the television so far, at least none that I've seen. So maybe it's all in this week.
So Chicago, when you ran them, not the top three, not the top 10, not the
27th.
top 20. 27th, is that a per capita number or is that a raw number?
Well, no, that's the rolling number, average for viewership in Chicago, the Chicago market, which is, you know, the suburbs and the city proper.
Which that's pretty dismal.
Well, it's Chicago. I mean, we got other things to worry about, the Blackhawks, you know, and the Bulls and
We're worried about the Blackhawks. Yes, we are. We understand that. We know how
Although you think with the way they're doing, there might be some interest in tuning in.
Hey, did you write a story about the White Sox and WGN?
Yes.
Don't laugh at that. That's a brand new marriage. That's going to be wedded bliss, my friend.
Well, I don't know. It remains to be seen. I think everybody agrees they've got to up their game if they're going to be a big hit.
I think they are. And I'm excited about it, frankly, to see baseball back on GN. Another piece you wrote, and this had to upset City Hall. You kind of called their bluff when it comes to, you basically said they're making up their tourism numbers.
I think there's some reason to believe that may
really
be the case.
They bragged about
it. Because
early.
Rahm is running for re-election, rumor has it, and he needs to have something to point at that's been a success.
So they said that they had 55.2 million. And you then looked at hotel vacancies?
At the actual occupancy numbers, which are declining in 7 out of 12 months. So something seems to be amiss there.
Wow.
All these record numbers of people are pouring into the city.
Read that.
They wouldn't respond to my inquiries, they still haven't.
Well, so we'll have to have Rahm on the pedal pub with us, and we'll sort it out.
Maybe we can figure it out.
Not in Naperville, though. We won't do that. We'll be Wicker Park. Louis Lazar writes for the Business Journal. Read more at Chicago Business Journal. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
We'll talk again. We got to talk soon because tournament's coming up. Your college basketball is your thing, too.
Oh, please.
What's Kentucky doing?
I watched in between the skating last night. I watched Kentucky, I tell you. It's not. They did win last night, but it's not the same team we've seen in previous years.
Oh, maybe they're not paying them as much.
I don't know.